Hello and welcome to A Gram of Hope. I'm your host, C. Jerome Graham. Today we're speaking with a lady who I just met her for a moment, but her story is good for the ages. Such a phenomenal individual. She's the executive director of Open Arms Transformation Living. It's a nonprofit dedicated to empowering marginalized female youth aged 12 to 20. And there's a lot of challenges out there. As a matter of fact, we just came out of Domestic Awareness Month. And there's another Awareness Month coming up in February. So we're going to have her come back. But today, I want you to listen to Fonda Royster's story. And you're going to be as amazed at her ability to overcome. And you know, you might pick up some hints on something that might help you or help somebody that you know when they're dealing with a storm in their life. What I want you to talk about is what you had to go through and how it motivated you to, like expensive cream, rise to the top of your situation. Because there was a lot that you had to encounter when you were just a child that would have broken most people. But you're sitting in front of me, I can see you looking good and feeling good. Talk to people about Fonda Royster.
Absolutely. But I want to correct you with something you said when you said that there are some kids that have to deal with abuse. There are a lot of kids that have to deal with abuse, yes. Specifically in Lucas County. I was born in Lucas County, but the circumstances of how I got here is a little unique. So my parents were both in the military, and my mom's from Ohio, my daddy's from Alabama. They met in Germany, and love was in the air. Unbeknownst to my mother, though, my daddy left a fiance in Alabama. And if you ever heard, if you have loved ones that are in the military, they'll always tell you it's a world within a world, if that makes sense. So she leaves because she's pregnant with me. He eventually leaves, and they have to get to know each other outside of the military, right? And it didn't go as planned. It didn't go as planned. And they both had their own untreated trauma. And in hindsight, I look at it now like they got together because they was trauma bonding anyway.
You said trauma bonding? I've never heard that term.
Yes.
Okay, trauma bonding.
Because typically people, we are attracted to people who have similarities as us. So not being funny, it's easy. I have seen drug addicts from different spaces. Different. And it's just something about them picking up each other's spirit like, and all of a sudden they come together and you're like, what in the world? That's part of trauma bonding.
Okay.
That's not what we're talking about, but that's the best example that I could give. So my mother had a lot of untreated trauma from her end, childhood, incest, repeated sexual assault, things of that nature. My dad, a lot of substance abuse going on between the parents, as well as domestic violence. And especially in the African-American community, you just learn how to be resilient and sweep things under the rug. But the thing is, just because you don't deal with it doesn't mean it don't go away. And we all cope in some way, whether or not it's journaling or singing or picking up a bottle or popping some pills. We gonna cope. That's inevitable. Unfortunately, I got caught in the middle of that. And so they end up breaking up. And my father, he was the man where I was a daddy's girl. And I feel that fathers are the mirror for a daughter to know how she should be valued, how she should
important.
Be treated.
Yes.
Right? But when I was six, he meets another woman, not even the fiance. This woman says, so the priority is if you want to be with me, we don't talk about bastard kids. They don't exist. So the man who I would tell everybody, I'm a Mary, because that's my daddy, right? Now he chooses this woman, and now I'm cut from his life. With my mother, same thing. She got hooked up. She had her unhealthy coping mechanism, substance abuse, and looking for love in all the wrong places.
Now, let me. They didn't talk to anybody, did they? They were just maneuvering through life as they understood to move.
Absolutely. Again, it's just a culture of, yeah, it happened. tie your shoestrings, keep it moving. So I'm going to fast forward. So she got with people and they were like, so I want you, I don't want your daughter. So now I am being passed to different family members, right? And I have been in so many homes, I cannot tell you how many homes I have been in. However, I have been in enough homes where I could tell you every home is not kid friendly. I am 44 years old. I still have scars of the whips where my skin was broken open. I still have burn marks where I was burned because adults were upset. Not even the kids. These were adults. And it just was not a good time. And the few times that I did tell adults, nothing happened and it continued. So now I am 13. I am back with my mother. And now her untreated trauma with my untreated trauma, and we are coming together. Plus, I'm a teenager, and teenagers are weird, and they get on your nerves. Like, I'm dealing with it right now, right? So we're together, we're bumping heads, and one day, she hit me over the head with a cast iron pan. So I was like, yo, I'm done, because whenever she was triggered, she took it out on everybody. I ran away to my aunt's house, and I told her what happened, and my aunt said, well, you call the people, CSB. She was like, because I ain't no narc. Okay, so we more worried about being called a snitch than protecting your niece. Okay, not a problem. I call them. The lady comes to get me. She takes me to Wendy's, and yes, I remember it was Wendy's, because when you were poor back then, going to fast food was really a luxury. So we're at Wendy's. I'm telling her everything that's going on because I don't have anything to lose. And in my mind, I'm thinking, I'm not going back there. Not that I didn't want to have a relationship with my mother, but again, I really didn't live with my mom like that anyway. I would be with her for a spell, and I mean a spell, because she was a zombie. Blink, she there. Blink, she not there. So I'm thinking it's about to be this type of situation. Nope. The lady comes to our house, brings me to the house. My mother's talking to her. Now, one thing I will say, I've seen my mother cry on one hand ever in my life. This was one of them times I did see her cry. She said, I'm tired. We're struggling. I don't know what to do. She got tears in her eyes, all of that. And I was like caught off guard, like she cries. Okay. The lady looks at my mother. She tells my mother, don't put your hands on your daughter again. Leaves, closes our case, never provides services. So right after my eighth grade graduation, it was like a mutual thing, but pretty much I was kicked out the house. I was kicked out the house. So it wasn't too bad because school just let out, it's summertime, and you can play it off. You can couch hop, you can friend hop. So it wasn't too bad, but then school's about to start. I really don't have any place to go. All the good, my friends that had good parents, after a while, it's like, she's still here. Her mama knows she's still here. So now they about to ask questions, so now I gotta go to the next person, right? And eventually you get to a point where you go to a house you really don't want to go to, but I don't feel like sleeping outside. Now, I had relatives here, right? And I ain't trying to kick nobody's back in. And they knew the issues with my mother. Let me say that, because I wasn't even born when this stuff occurred. Nobody talked about it. And for the most part, my grandparents, they did try to cover me and safety, but my grandmother was a schizophrenic. So if she was having an episode, my grandfather had to deal with her. They couldn't deal with me. So again, I'm getting passed totally around. So school is starting. I have no place to go really. So I'm hanging out with the street kids. My family, they're talking about me, saying she don't go to school. She's always fighting. She's angry. I don't have parents. I did try to go to school, but I was the dirty kid. I washed up where I could wash up. And I remember going to school. I didn't start the first day. Let me say that. Did not start the first day. But when I walked in, I seen the eyes looking at me like, nobody said nothing. But I knew it. I was a dirty kid. I walked out. I never went back to school. Never went back to school. I ended up finding out I got a letter from the school. You know, when you don't go to school, they charge you with truancy or whatever. And I remember talking to the individual at that time. And again, it was one of that, you need to get yourself together. It was like beating me over the head. And again, nobody took the time to say, baby, what's going on with you?
They always said, you should, but nobody threw a lifeline.
Not at all. Because they knew my mother's address. And when you back, I don't know how they do now, but if your child missed school, you got a letter sent every day that they didn't come to school. So she had a collection of letters. Because I'm telling y'all, I went one time and never went again. So the first half of my freshman year, I was not in school. I was with my friends, and we literally just walked around. We drunk. We didn't have no place to go. And then those times at nighttime, you get desperate. And I would love to tell you that I got taken advantage of by strangers. I got taken advantage of people that knew my situation. So you had that older male. Did you eat? I don't have a problem getting you something to eat. But I knew what the expectation was. Now, this time, it's getting cold.
So self-preservation kicked
in. Absolutely. People don't want to realize that sex survival is very serious.
Sex survival.
Yes.
That's another term. So you've got trauma bonding, sex survival. Now, I'm sure that people in that environment know these terms, and they probably are triggers to run. But we who are ignorant, you teaching this today.
But in that time, I was 14, right? Now, 14-year-olds, now they can get a job, but you got to get a work permit, right? But you get a work permit because you go to school. I'm not going to school because I'm the dirty kid. No work permit means no job, can't get an apartment. But even if I had the money, I couldn't get an apartment anyway. So what am I supposed to do? I am a female, too. So there are certain hygiene products that I need. I don't have money. How am I supposed to get them? So you trade sexual favors for food, clothing, shelter. And the shelter is always temporary. I remember one day I got tired. It was close to December. Matter of fact, it was a week before Christmas. I got tired. I went to that same aunt's house. And she was like, let me take you someplace. Let's go somewhere. They took me to a detention center. I'm having an intervention. It's her, my other auntie, and the staff there. And they're talking about all the bad things I'm doing. It was, you should be going to school, young lady. So my mother is the topic now. They said, we're going to reach out to your mother. I said, my mother don't want me. No. Every parent wants their child. Every place I stayed with my mother, we always got evicted. Let me put that out like that, too. So I never, like, got comfortable in a home because why am I unpacking all this stuff and I'm going to have to pack it back up? We're not doing that. We never had all utilities running at the same time. It was always something off. So they have to go to the house because she has no phone. I know what they're about to tell me, but now I'm about to be extra pissed off because it's one thing to know you rejected, but when somebody is reminding you you're rejected, it takes you to a whole nother level. So now they're saying, well, Mom said it's not a good time for you to get. So now I'm pissed. I'm ready to swing because I told y'all she don't want me. Now you're confirming what I already know. So they're calling all the family down here. Now my mother has... It was 11 of them total back then. So my aunt, who was the second oldest of the 11, who lives in New Jersey, they got in contact with her, and it was like, she's going to take you. So I remember being on the phone with her, and she said, all right, Fonda, now you're going to come up here, and you're going to be something. You're going to get yourself together. And I'm like, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. She had her best friend drive me from here to New Jersey, Montclair, New Jersey. And I remember first day I got there, I tried to be cool. I couldn't even be cool no more. I started breaking down, crying. And my aunt was, I call her my mom now, but she just smooth. She was like, okay, so you gonna cry today and tomorrow we're gonna get it together. And literally I had a support team overnight. The school knew what it was. Nobody judged me. I had an opportunity to start over. I had positive friends. I would love to say I was a bowl of rainbow and sunshines. No, I was not. And when I went back to school, enrolled back in school, because I dropped out, of course I had all zeros. Forget Fs. I just had zeros. So I had to do the special ed classes. I'm like, I'm not dumb. And they're like, we know you're not, but we still need to know where you are. So that was like, nah. So now y'all saying, because to me is, oh, because I was out there, y'all just saying I'm, it, no.
But you weren't the unclean kid anymore.
Oh, definitely not. Definitely not the unclean kid anymore. But even when you said that, though, I thank God that I'm not, I don't rejoice in the abuse and neglect, but I rejoice in the fact that I have compassion. Because I have kids I embrace. They don't smell good, and I'm going to still give them a hug because that was me. And at the end of the day, especially my babies, if they sleeping in the car or whatever the case may be, I could go home and take a shower. They can't. And I'm never going to, I get kids that say, Miss Fonda, I had to sleep with these many men because I'm hungry. Am I going to fuss at them? No. My thing is, so how about next time you call me so we ain't got to do that? Because don't no child, I don't care who's listening to me. I don't care how a child is acting. No child, female or male, wants a grown person sweating over them so they can eat, so they can use their shower. No. That is so inhumane.
At what point were you able to gain the strength to say, I too can move?
The fact that I made it. I don't really like talking about myself, to be honest with y'all. I got accomplishments, but I'm always mindful. It's still 15 Fondas that ain't made it. They didn't have the same grace and mercy as me.
So did your auntie in New Jersey help you get together and send you back to Toledo? Or you made up your mind to come back to Toledo?
No, so what happened is when you become an adult, you have to pay bills.
Yes.
And New Jersey is one of the most expensive states in the world. So I was like, I have experienced homelessness before as a kid. I don't want to do it as an adult. So I'm going to go back home. But before we move forward, this is the thing, too, I want to talk about. My aunt, my mom, would make me write my mother every Sunday.
Really?
She said, you got to write your mother. I said, I don't like your sister. She said, I don't care. I said, I'm going to cuss her out. She said, whatever you got to do, do it. But so my letters went from literally, I'm only writing you because mom said I had to write you. I don't like you. You hurt me this. But then they turned from that to, I joined the color guard. I got an A. I got a B. And I still, I have a good relationship with my bio mom because, again, it's that grace and mercy. She didn't get the help she should have gotten. My daddy didn't get the help he should have gotten. And youth homelessness, it is avoidable, but if certain intervention and strategies are not put in place, it will be inevitable. And it's now that I'm going to parent myself, because I used to say, oh, if I have kids, I would never do that. I would never do that. And guess what? Some of the stuff I do though. No, I don't abuse my kids, but I can yell sometimes because they're hard-headed.
As children
so
are.
I get it. I totally get. I just wanted to make sure I put that part in. Being bitter and being angry, it is so exhausting. It takes so much out of you. If I did not, and I got reunited with my daddy when I was 40. If I did not, that would have trickled down to my parents and to my kids. Because what you don't deal with will still deal with you.
Yes.
So I had to let that go. I had to let it go. And I don't think that what we go through is just to bless us. What we go through is to bless somebody else. We can bless at the same time, but it's to bless somebody else. Because even little things that you guys went through, I ain't asking us, it ain't none of my business. But it could have taken some people out, for real. It could have taken some people out. And it's a grace of mercy because I'm not a walking STD. I wasn't even supposed to have kids. I had my kids naturally, 4 kids. I could have been cuckoo talking to myself. Well, according to my kids, I'm a little crazy. But other than that, you get what I'm saying. So I don't think God rescued me just to say, okay, Fonda, because I love you, I'm going to help you get out of this situation, and you're just going to be happy all the days of your life.
get us back to Toledo and talk about how you began to, or the, how the relationships began to mend around you.
So when I'm relocated to Toledo, I went back to my field. I've been in social work going now for 22 years. So the first agency I worked for, I don't know if I can say the name, but it was an adoption agency. And I've always been in foster care. And I had a problem because in New Jersey, I was what people call the baby snatcher, where I remove the kids from the unsafe house. But in this space where I'm working, I'm adoption. So I'm trying to find homes for these babies. And I just had a problem because how was a baby in foster care for 18 years? That just bothered me. And then they exit out. No basic life skills, no social support. So literally the majority of my caseload ended like that. They 18, they get emancipated, and within a month, I'm getting advice, hey, they're standing at the corner selling cookies or cookies, and you pick your poison on which one you think I'm talking about, or they're incarcerated. And they're getting villainized for something that's not their fault. Because half of those kids in foster care, they were already adopted, and because they didn't act like the perfect child, they literally got dropped off at the door of children's services by that adoptive parent and while the parent's driving off. So now there's a double rejection. And, of course, they're acting out. They're self-sabotaging and all of that. And one of the cases that triggered me to step out with implementing Open Arms Transformation Living, I had a 17-year-old. She entered children's services when she was four. Her mother was her first pimp. She had been in up to 40 homes where she was re-victimized in each one of the homes. By the time I got her, she was charging $350 for just 30 minutes. So they're getting on her because why are you selling yourself? You don't think you're smart?
We're not talking about $3.50, are
we? $350.
Yes.
She had people that would get a cab for her to drive from here to Fremont, wherever. Yes, it's real out there. And so they wanted to just, when she turned 18, they just wanted to kick her. I was like, we're not, no, because y'all failed her. Every adult failed her. Because again, she went into children's services 4 years old. It's easy to mold a baby, but a teenager, no, we're not doing that. So I was able to advocate for her where she got an apartment where they were going to help her. But then the other issue was they wanted her to work at McDonald's. I don't understand why she doesn't work at McDonald's. $350 for 30 minutes for how many years? $10 an hour. She didn't get like that overnight. It's not going to happen like that overnight. So she technically was like my first client. And I just believe that you're either a solution to a problem or you're an added problem to a problem. And if you do nothing, you're a problem. And I don't do good with, like, work politics, especially when kids are involved. It just boils my britches. And so I stepped out on faith, and we have Open Arm Transformation Living, non-judgmental space where these kids, if they need something, they can come talk to us. Tell me what you need. You go on our website. I'm not asking parents' permission to feed the babies, clothe the babies, because we was at the first school that received us was Woodward. We literally emailed all the high schools. Woodward was the only one to say, we do have an issue with homelessness and poverty. Can you help us? They had 700 kids at that time. 150 of them was homeless. So we were able to engage all of those kids. We had kids that would come in literally with lingerie because they just got done working and they didn't have anything else. And we was able to go out and get them appropriate clothing. And initially we started off with ages 16 to 20 because those are the kids that fall through the crack because again, nobody has patience for them. But then the shock for us too, we were getting calls from UT staff that there were kids, soon as they got dropped off that first day, their parents was like, I did my job, bye. And they left them there.
Freshman year of college.
Yes. So then they're sleeping on dorm floors or in the showers. And they're also utilizing sex survival. Because, yes, their books are paid for, but they don't have anything left over for housing. And housing is expensive. So that was another issue of why we did 16 to 20, but my other space I work at is juvenile court, where I'm the domestic violence resource specialist. So I assess, it could be 1,000 cases per year. 40% of those cases are domestic violence. And when I speak to those young, I call everybody young, but when I speak to them, 90% of them reported that their first experience of violence happened in youth. So my thing is and was at that time, if we can get them down here, they won't have to talk to me after they turn 18 because I deal with the adults. So we implemented Our Voices Matter, which is a teen dating violence program. Do I agree that 10-year-olds and 11-year-olds should be dating? No. But statistics and reality show you have 9 and 10-year-olds having sex. And they're not just a 9-year-old having sex with another 9-year-old. No, they're a 9-year-old having sex with a 15-year-old, a 15-year-old having sex with a 30-year-old. So it's just so many things. That's going on in Lucas County, and people are uncomfortable talking about it. But again, just because you don't address it does not mean it's going away.
Or that it doesn't exist.
Or it doesn't exist. Because just this past summer, we implemented our We Matter 2 summer series where we dealt with the 9-year-olds to 11-year-olds. Half of our class was ages 9 to 11. 80% of the whole class said they were survivors of domestic violence, or they had a friend their age who was also a survivor, particularly sexual abuse. And that's heavily interconnected with human trafficking, poverty, substance use, because some of these kids have parents that are addicts. And if the drug dealer is tired of having a mama or daddy, guess who they're gonna take? They're gonna take the baby. And then the other issue with that, now we have 9-year-olds up to 18-year-olds going to the hospital, not just for one STD, for multiple STDs. And it's an increase in teen pregnancy. And are we shocked that 50% of homeless youth or young people experience domestic violence? They try to kill themselves?
Yeah, because after a while, you just feel like there's no one that cares and no one looks at you as a human being.
They're invisible.
So that's got to affect you mentally.
Absolutely. And definitely, again, I told trusted adults and nothing got resolved.
How were you able to rebuild your trust or at least become comfortable enough to talk to adults, to approach adults? Because it seemed like they had let you down.
Oh, it took me a while. The first adult I trusted would be my mom, which is my aunt, technically my aunt. It was a process. It was a process. Even as a social worker, again, I'm removing those kids. And I had to check my bias, right? Because it's all bad. But I have more patience for an addict parent as opposed to a parent who abandoned their kids for a significant other. Like, that was so triggering for me. Like, what is...
You gonna leave me for that?
Yes, because again, every relationship my mother was in, I was an inconvenience. And then I'm in a space where I'm reminded by adults, your mama don't want you, your daddy don't want you.
So your life was a true essence of that term, hurt people. Because you had a lot of hurt people around you and they shared their hurt with you when really all you needed was somebody to ultimately say, what are you going through? At least we'll listen. Whether they cared or not, at least they would listen. And you had a lot to say.
Right. And that's the main thing I want for these kids, to be that trusted adult for them. I do not tell these kids everything they want to hear. I tell them what they need to hear. My basic tip, Ms. Fonda gonna cut fuss, but they know I care and I'm consistent. I would love to tell you, even with my adult clients, I would love to tell you, soon as I talk and give advice, they're like, fine, Ms. Fonda, I'm totally listening to you. Not. I have mothers with stitches in their forehead telling me, I'm not going to leave him. And in my mind, I am fussing. But what comes out of my mouth is, I'm still here. But can we discuss what's the benefits of you staying in this situation? And we take it from there. Because if I beat them over the head like I was beat over the head, if they want to change their mind and they don't have nobody else to turn to, are they really going to come back to me? Because right. The last memory they have of me is judging them. No. So I'm going to smile. I got practice because I got kids, you know, and kids don't always listen. So I just smile, mm-hmm. And when they get another boo-boo and come running, I'm going to hug them and embrace them.
Now, your experience, your training, you're exposed to spot and understand social determinants of health, as well as mental mechanisms to help people navigate and negotiate trauma. Have you had to go back and talk to any of your siblings or your parents to help them? Or has it been, I'm still the child and you still the parent?
Oh, no. I had a conversation with both my parents. One thing, because my dad stayed in Alabama, so I had more access to my mom. But she would tell me, I know I don't deserve you. And it was times I would, again, like I said, I would get triggered. And she could give good advice, like especially when I became a mother for the first time. She had wisdom for me. Do the baby like this, sort of it. And then sometimes I would just snap, though, because I'm like, how are you giving me advice? So I had to work on myself before I could try to work on them. Because what's the point of me still sitting in damage trying to heal their wounds? How's that going to work with our dynamics? Not at all. Now, they both seek their own mental health recovery, which is awesome. And we just moving forward. Because I get those questions. You still talk to your parents? Why? They didn't grow up saying, I'm going to abandon my daughter. I'm going to put her through. I know in my heart, my mother did not think people she thought she could trust, especially family members, would do this to her daughter. No. Or even my dad, because I stayed with his people too. They didn't think that.
Now, he had that military background, so there's a certain discipline that he still retained, even though he moved away from the military. Somewhere in the recesses of his mind, some of that training still had to be there. Otherwise, he probably wouldn't still be with us, because life be lifing.
Yeah, you're
and,
right.
And, you know, some of the experiences that we have catch us off. I remember hearing about a cousin who I admired greatly. I mean, he was one of my favorite cousins. Mm-hmm. I wanted to hang out with him so bad just to be around him, because he was just so cool. And I heard that in order to keep from getting caught by the police, he ingested a couple bags of heroin. And I'm thinking, but he was so cool. That was stupid. But in my eyes, he was the man.
Superhero.
But people make mistakes if they don't have that structure, that discipline, when they're making their own decisions. Do you ever have anybody come back to you and say, Miss Royster, if it hadn't been for you, I wouldn't have made it?
All the time.
How does
it
make
you
feel?
I'm not one of them people. I'm a mother, so it made me cheese. I'd be like, ooh. I'm not big-headed at all, because that's, I live to serve and I serve to live. That makes me feel good. I love stories like that, because I just do, at the end of the day, I just try to be who I wish I had. I just try to be my auntie. That's it. And again, especially with not street kids, but kids that know the streets, or even adults, wherever they are in life, I just want to be that person where they can look and say, if she made it, I know I can make it. I don't look like no social worker. I do not. Y'all looking at me right now? I don't. I got pink hair. I'm tatted up with piercings. It's okay to be different. That don't mean you ain't valuable.
Well, I would imagine that in order to gain acceptance with the street kids, you can't go in with a three-piece suit and a tie.
Honey, you could ask all the judges at juvenile court. From day one, I've never wore a three-piece suit. I would probably have on a yellow two-piece suit or bright red, And the next time you see me, it is going to be a different hairstyle. I'm going to be me. And guess what? It's okay. Now, first week I get there, everybody like, oh, okay. But it's not about what I look like. What do I bring to the table? People going to talk about you whether or not you look like a clone or not, whether or not you do something good or bad. So you might as well just be you. Be authentic.
You got people like Dr. Cecilia Williams in your group.
Mm-hmm.
How did you connect up with people like her?
People watch us, and I watch people too, because I don't care how long you've been established. Are you doing the work? Everybody's not comfortable. Like I said, it ain't just the kids. I will hug a homeless person. I don't care. Everybody's not comfortable with that. But they'll take a picture next to an individual like that. Nope. I say what I mean. I mean what I say. So that's how, and she, even though her main ram is human trafficking, youth homelessness goes along with that. Teen domestic violence goes along with that. So pretty much they just put their ears to the street like I did, and we had a conversation, and from then on, we've been rocking.
Are you still able to find the street kids?
They everywhere. And on a serious note, so again, I'm at juvenile court, so I see the kids coming in. You hear what's going on with them, specifically with the females. Up to 90% of the females, they're human trafficking survivors, teen dating violence survivors. So they get incarcerated, but there's no mental health services being implemented. There's no mentoring service being implemented. And the same could be said for the young men too, right? So they release them to trusted adults, but again, in 3 to 6 months, they're going to find them again in Florida, Detroit, or New York, and they get incarcerated again until they're 18. And then it's another court they got to deal with. So it's not just, oh, she just talking about teen dating violence or poverty. It affects everything. I've had adults, well, what this got to do with me? So now I got to hit you with your pockets. Are you a taxpayer, sir? Yes, I am. So then I go back to, so I'm back 14. I got to do what I got to do, whether or not it's game banging, breaking in your house, whatever. I get locked up. I ain't got no money. Who paying for that? And then it's that light bulb like, well, what can I do to help? But why does it even have to go there? Why not just be a human? Especially if you're a parent.
Yeah, have a heart in the first
place. Have a heart. Youth exploitation wouldn't be in demand if it wasn't people thirsty for it.
Interesting.
And you will find that out in sometimes people watch movies and you think, oh, that's unrealistic. That it does. And you have that hope like, are you going to be that one to help me? Because I just didn't get molested by males. I got molested by females. And females are deemed to be more safe, right? But if
that's
again,
the perception.
If they have their own untreated issues, you just said hurt people.
So true. So true. Now, we're just about out of time. Any final comments or anything you want anyone to know about Open Arms or what they can do to make the future better for someone else?
First thing you could do to make the future better for somebody else is to be that open arms person. Hold a conversation. Simply, how you doing? You be different. Don't just assume. I don't like hearing the term again, she fresh, he bad. There's a reason why they're responding like that. Kids don't look for bad attention. They look for good attachment, but it gets distorted. If I don't know what a healthy relationship looks like, why do you expect me to be in a healthy relationship? And I'm not just talking about intimate. I'm talking about even with friendship. If my surroundings just smell of hopelessness, why would you think I would be all joyful and skipping? Get educated about the problems in Lucas County, especially about the youth. Everybody's not comfortable engaging people, and that's fine. I don't like doing paperwork. I don't like sitting in front of a computer. I feel like I see my birth all over again. I hate it. But it's somebody that loves it, and we help balance each other out. Because where I don't mind going in the field, they help take care of the background stuff. Does that make sense?
Sure.
And they can always go on our website, OTA, O-A, T as in Tom, L as in Larry, Toledo, all of that is together, otatoledo.org, to see what we're about. Because I can say it, but I want you to see what we're about. Even when people ask, well, how can I said, check us out first. And then if you're still interested in helping us, then we can proceed.
That's OTA Toledo?
OTA, O-A, T as in Tom, L as in Larry, Toledo.org. And that stands for Open Arms Transformation Living.
Thank you for talking to us.
Thank you for having me.
We appreciate you.
I appreciate you guys.
I want to thank our guest, Ms. Fonda Royster. She's opened our eyes and our hearts, and we hope that she's opened your heart as well to reach out and make a difference for someone's life. There's plenty of opportunities. You just have to be the one to step up. I'm your host and producer, Jerome Graham. Our executive producer is Chris Piper. If you have any questions, comments, or you want to just listen again, go to wgte.org/hope or wherever you stream your podcasts.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.